Clive said, I've got no one to do the sermon or the service in August. You fancy a go? If we could get it up. I said, well, I'll give it a go. I was reading through Psalms at the time and I came across Psalm 40. And so I thought, well, this is what I've got to talk about. For a start, have you noticed that we're living in an instantaneous world, aren't we? You know, everything's got to be immediate. Have you seen everyone walking around with their mobile phones, their iPads and all the rest of it? You know, everything's now designed. I'm surprised you haven't got yours going. We've got to have instant access to everything, haven't we? Information and news. We've got to be connected to people. You know, it's immediate. Whatever the time. You know, last night there was mobile phone text going off in our house at midnight. It's great. We've got to be available, haven't we? We've got to be available to take the news by text, by email. You know, how on earth did we manage to cope in our lives before the iPhone, the iPad, texts, emails, you name it? We're also sort of conditioned, aren't we, to expect instant success. You know, football's dear to my heart. It's very frustrating. You know, a manager loses his job if a team loses three games. I mean, what's the point in that? On the news, you see business leaders, if their share price drops, off with their head. Now, I remember when I was just first starting out in accountancy, I would consider that a job was a success if I could get a payback for my investment in 3 years. I would be lucky to get 3 months now in my current role. The pace of life and change is absolutely incredible. And yet, when I read this first line, I waited patiently for the Lord. There's something sort of perfectly natural about this opening line. Three things struck me about that line. Let's hope we can get further than the first line, because it's a great psalm. Thank you, David. We are to wait patiently. We are to wait patiently. More often than not, things don't happen immediately. You know, have you been praying for somebody or something for a long time and seen no results? This says to me, don't give up. Keep on. Believe. Hope. And keep praying. You know, loads of preachers stand up here and tell about stories about people who have been prayed for a long time. The second thing is that there's an expectancy of a reaction. The mere fact that he was waiting patiently means that he was confident of some sort of rescue from the position that he was placed. You wouldn't sit there waiting patiently if you didn't think something was going to happen. You'd just give up and go home, wouldn't you? You know, let's be expectant of our God to answer our prayers. Why not? Why not? The third thing is the Lord's got his own timescales. It's not the timescales of man. It's not driven by man. But in his own way, God reacts. Maybe not in the way that we expect, but I'm sure and I know that God does. The second part of that first verse. He turned to me and heard my cry. When I read that, I thought, hang on a minute, that's the wrong way around, isn't it? Surely it should be, he heard my cry and turned to me. I mean, that's the natural human reaction, isn't it? To someone in distress, you hear a cry and you turn and you go. It's the wrong way around. Why? I mean, is it wrong? Actually, I don't think so. We're dealing with someone that's supernatural, and as if now was the appointed time for the writer to be sorted out. What a relief the Lord turning to you, you know something's going to happen. Now, Carol's been reading this psalm all week, and at some point she's going to come in and tell me I've got it wrong or right. Or, you never know. Have you ever been stuck in the mud? Alone in a slimy pit? You know, we've all seen the movies, haven't we, where the bad guy gets stuck in a quicksand and he's struggling to get out and all of a sudden he's pulled under and that's the end of him. The psalmist affirms that God can easily lift us up. Easily lift us up. Now, I guess these words are metaphoric and they can apply to any difficult, melancholic, depressed state that we find ourselves in. But the psalmist says that God can lift us up. David was in this position. He was in a corner that was not too good. And he waited for the Lord, and his prayers were answered. You know, I've been lucky so far in my life to avoid the bouts of despair and doubt. But if those times come along, I hope I can remember this psalm and act upon it. He set my feet on a rock and gave me a firm place to stand. We all feel better when we've got our feet on solid ground, don't we? In my early days of air flight, it was all right sort of when I got up there, but taking off and coming down were a bit of a problem. And I always felt better when I got off the plane and got back on firm ground. You know, it makes us feel better, doesn't it? As Christians, we have a solid rock. We proclaim Christ as our solid rock, our sure foundation. You know, this psalm is so much like a conversion story. It just could be straight out of the New Testament, couldn't it? You know, we've got the sort of picture of a sinner lost in a miry pit, you know, full of our own sort of shortcomings and our sin. Lifted out by God to salvation. Stand on Christ's promises. You know, it's amazing. It really is. And what happens when salvation occurs? We've got something to be thankful for, haven't we? You know, we've had some great songs today and your singing's been fantastic. It's been great. And what the psalmist says, you know, he put a new song in my mouth and a hymn of praise to our God. You know, David was really going for it now, wasn't he? He was really going for it. You know, I might be biased, and I probably am, but it has always struck me how joyful Christian worship songs are. You know, we've got something to be grateful for, haven't we? And if you listen to some of these songs, they give it from the guts, don't they? Fantastic songs. Now, as a young man, I'll just tell you this story. As a young man, I was quite an earnest chap, and I used to spend hours and hours on the doorstep talking to Jehovah's Witnesses. Used to come and knocking on my door, and you know, I would say, "Well, why don't you come to our church?" You know, and they said, "Well, why don't you come to us?" I said, "All right, I will." So I went one Sunday morning, and don't ask me why, right? But a friend of mine, Dave Camp, where we went along, we were hoping maybe we'd say, "Come on, come to our church." It didn't happen, but anyway, the songs were a dirge. I have to say, it was dreadful. And, you know, I think it's because there's no joy in salvation. No joy in salvation. Next Sunday, when I got back to Sycamore Chapel, Sam McGowan approached me and he said, "Tom," he said, "I heard you went off somewhere last Sunday." I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, what'd you do that for?" I said, "Sam, I don't know." And, you know, he was right. He said, "We had a lovely service here. Why waste the opportunity of praising God? Why waste it?" And he was right, and I agree with him. Christian songs have got some substance to them. You know, that verse, "He put a new song into my mouth, a hymn of praise to our God." It just shouts to me about a renewal of spirit and a desire to express our gratitude and thanks to God for the salvation he's given us. If you were here a couple of weeks ago, you listened to Peter Judd talking, and he was talking about wow moments in the Bible. Well, this next verse is just one of those. I still, when I read it, I still just sort of amazed at it. You know, verse 3, second part. Many will see and fear and put their trust in the Lord. Just think about it. You know, what will they see? The transformation in your life due to salvation. The wonders that God has performed. The power of God. And fear? Fear of the Lord? Am I supposed to be filled with dread? Well, from our studies in Proverbs, we should all know that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. You're right. Well, we could substitute in wonder and awe, and I could speak on for another 2 hours if I learnt about it, about the fear of the Lord. But the fear, what is it? A fear of getting into trouble? Or a fear of offending someone you love? The fear of the Lord is the latter, of course. And that word many, that word many. It'd be nice to see one or two, wouldn't it? But the psalmist says many. Because of what God's done in your life. And trust. Because of what's happened to you in your life and your salvation, many will trust in the Lord. It's true, isn't it? People can see a change in our lives. They will know there's something powerful happening. So the question is, what's our witness like? I hope this was God putting a thought in my head. It was just one line. The line is, how is it that what you are doing is bringing glory to me? I examine your life, you know. David Cameron, he says, you know, referring to Pakistan, he says, look in both ways. Well, the same could apply to us. You can't look both ways, can you? You've got to be in one camp or the other. You can't have one foot. You can't sit on the fence. It's all or nothing with God, isn't it? It's all or nothing. Four or five, it's nicely put into little blocks, this psalm. Verses 4 and 5. Blessed is the man who makes the Lord his trust. Blessed. Or as Richard's pointed out to me on Wednesday, special. We make the Lord his trust, we are blessed. We've got divine favour, not necessarily earthly success, but a supernatural one. And the psalmist is saying it's a good thing to trust in the Lord. It's a good thing. And then he says, a warning. Don't be led astray. Watch out for people who are trying to lead you in paths that you might not want to go. It's not just graven images that are false gods, but the message is clear here. Keep your eye on God. Let Jesus do the leading. You know, just a few verses ago, we were in a pit of despair, and now we're counting our blessings. Both those that have happened and those that are to come. And we get the sense that our lives are planned for us. What a lesson. You know, count your blessings one by one. You can do it if you try. Honestly, you can. I've done it. I sat down and I did it. Remember what God's done for us and will continue to do for us. I'm going to read verses 6 to 8. Sacrifice and offering you did not desire, but my ears you have pierced. Burnt offerings and sin offerings you did not require. Then I said, here am I have come. It is written about me in the scroll. I desire to do your will, O my God. Your law is within my heart. What's he talking about? Is he talking about Jesus? He is, isn't he? You could just lift this bit up and stick it in the New Testament and it would not look out of place. And blow me down if it isn't in the New Testament. If you looked in chapter 10 of Hebrews, it quotes this passage of scripture virtually word for word as something that Jesus claimed for himself. I think it's an amazing piece of prophecy. I mean, David couldn't have known what he was talking about, what he's writing down about here. I mean, he was, you know, a Jew. He would be well into the offerings. But he writes something different here. I like this bit about, my ears you have pierced. In the New Testament, it's slightly changed, and it says, there's a body prepared for me. I like this bit about the ear piercings. Gives a bit of credence to my kids who want their ears pierced and their nose pierced and their belly button pierced. They do it because they want to adorn themselves and make themselves look beautiful. But in these times, and I wish Wayne was here to back me up, but I think it was something to do with the sign of a slave wanting to remain with their master. And in many respects, this was true of Jesus. Jesus didn't want to lay down his life to us, but he was obedient to God, the Father, and went through with his calling. And in the New Testament, it talks about a body prepared for me, a sacrifice once for all, which we talked about earlier on. Burnt offerings and sin offerings and all the rest of the offerings, they had to be done continually. They had to be continually offered. But his sacrifice was once for all. You can imagine Jesus saying, here I am, I have come. It's written about me in the scroll. And then he says, I desire to do your will, O God. And you remember in the garden, that's exactly what he prayed. Your will, my Father, not mine. You know, it is the same for us. It's the same message. Your will, not mine. But the question is it really your will I seek, or my own and yours when it fits? Your will. Your will. Your law is within my heart. Not in my head, but in the very being, the very guts of my person. That's when we're really, truly close to God. You know, you can have all the head knowledge in the entire world. You could be the most intelligent bloke in the world, but it means nothing where God's concerned. You know, some people sort of laugh at this, but I actually love my wife. I don't love my wife in my head. I love my wife in my heart. It's the same with God. We love him from the bottom of our heart. It defies logic, but it's so natural. You know, I get the impression that David was a very passionate man. Whatever he did it with verve, and he did it with drive, and he did it with might. You remember when he danced before the Lord, he'd give it all he got, didn't he? Just give it some. And you read the Psalms, they are just so expressive, aren't they? You know, good and bad, both ends of the spectrum. I mean, we've experienced it today, at the heights and at the depths. If you read, we're reading 9 to 10 now. You know, I proclaim your righteousness in the great assembly. I do not seal my lips. I do not hide your righteousness in my heart. I speak. I conceal your love and your truth in the great assembly. What a sermon that must have been. Hey, what a sermon. Oh, to be able to deliver something like that. To get up and give it all you got. He didn't mind who heard about the righteousness, the faithfulness, the salvation, the love and the truth. What great words coming out of two verses of God, the attributes of God. He spoke about these things freely and to great multitudes, great multitudes. You know, what about our witness? Would we stand up in a great mass of people and proclaim the love of God? Well, it's a big ask, isn't it, eh? It's a big ask. Well, would we talk to one or two others? You know, I'm challenging myself. You know, I had a great time last night listening to some Irish music at the cricket club. And they say, what are you doing tomorrow? I say, I'm taking service down to chapel. You coming? Oh, yeah, Mike, I'll be coming, yeah. So, several people asked, sort of laughing, joking. I got to keep on. You got to keep on. One day, you never know. Let's ask ourselves, you know, when was the last time we spoke to someone about what's God done for you? When's the last time we asked someone to come to chapel with us? I know it's easier to keep quiet. That way you've got nothing to live up to. You don't have to stand out in a crowd. And if you did something wrong, you don't get a number of fingers pointing at you saying, hypocrite. But is it right? You know, we've got a great God. We've got a great faith. We've got something good to share. And in these increasingly difficult times, I think the strength of Christian beliefs will become more important. You know, we believe this is the natural way to live our lives. We believe that it is what God planned for us. You know, let's emulate David. Verse 13, it says, be pleased, Lord, to save me. Yeah, I think the Lord will be very pleased to save you. Very pleased indeed. We always talk, well, back in when I was at Sycamore, we used to say, there'll be rejoicing in heaven over one sinner that repents. And that's true, isn't it? I think God will be very pleased to save you. And if you don't already know and love him, seek him. Seek him now. And I'll finish by just reading verse 16 because it's a great affirmation. May all who seek you rejoice and be glad in you. May those who love your salvation always say, together, the Lord be exalted. Amen. Amen. Let's sing, shall we? In closing, great Wesley hymn, And Can It Be?